Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Be listening all night to Bob Mamet from his CD London House Blues, because it's a very Chicago CD, as is the Mamet family. Bob's older brother is David Mamet, who wrote a few plays and a few movies, and Bob is equally talented in another venue. A remarkable book came across my desk. Many books come across my desk, and very few of them are remarkable. This one is called City Edition. I don't know what, fellas, the two men who made this book, Tom Mayday and Sam Landers, are in here. They are the partners, editors, and publishers of this Trope City Edition. This is your first Trope City Edition, and it is Chicago.
Yes.
Talk to me about Trope City for a second. This is your, you know, you guys seem like bright, sensible guys. I've said this before the show. You don't seem like drug addicts or lunatics of any kind. Yet you decided to start, wow, it's 2019. Let's start a publishing company. It's a tough, tough era for publishing companies. Why did you decide to start this, Sam?
Well, you know, Tom and I have known each other for quite a while, and we've actually had a couple books published before.
Independently,
but books that we've worked on together. And, you know, this is something we've always wanted to do. And, you know, one of the things that we've recognized is that photography, which is both of our interests, has changed dramatically in the last six or so years, especially with social media.
Sure.
And mobile.
Well, and digitally, too. I mean, I'm a little older than you guys, but I certainly have seen amazing technological changes in how photos are taken, what they're taken with, how they're made, how they're produced, how they're developed.
I spent many years in the film era.
Talk to me, because you're going to be on the whole hour. Talk to me about your background, Tom. Where are you from?
I grew up in Evanston, and I spent some time at Rochester Institute of Technology.
Sure, know it well.
Where it really was a Kodak university, and they were teaching me basically how to make film. I was not that interested in learning how to make film, so I left school and started assisting Victor Skrobnesky.
You were an assistant to Victor?
Yes.
I know Victor very well. Victor Skrobnesky, for those of you who don't know him, is one of the leading. He's made a lot of money shooting fashion, but he is also an artist of incredible note, famous for his portraiture for the Chicago International Film Festival, among many things. How'd you get a job with Victor?
You know, it was the craziest random visit to an aunt and uncle in New York City in 1981. Their neighbor in New York, their neighbor's mother was Editha Sherman, who had her studio in the Carnegie Hall studio. And that has gotten some attention.
Nice
lately.
Building to have a studio. Yeah.
So she lived there, and she had a studio there, and she needed an assistant. Victor rented her studio every time he came into town. He was shooting for Estee Lauder. I had a chance to meet him, and his assistant left a few weeks later. So it was just the random luck of being in the right place. But so Victor was an incredible person to learn from.
Still is.
Yes.
His favorite shot, one of his favorite shots, is that legendary shot of Vanessa Redgrave.
Yes.
You know me. I'm talking to the guy who was your assistant for all those years. And he must have inspired you as a photographer then.
His influence was so strong on me that I had to, it took many years for me to not photograph like Victor Skrobnesky.
Exactly,
because
sure.
He had such a vision and was an incredible artist, knew how to light a subject so incredibly beautifully. before it could be corrected or improved in Photoshop.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how long did you work for Victor?
I worked for Victor for almost 3 years. And so I was around the negatives that are the well-known ones. The,
sure.
The portraits and...
Orson Welles.
Orson Welles,
yeah.
Vanessa Redgrave. And
and then you went out on your own as a photographer, or...?
So, yes. I was a struggling photographer, trying to find my own vision.
They all are at first. I mean, they all are at first. Even Victor at first was kind of...
Trying to make a living.
Yeah, sure.
So I started bringing a portfolio of pictures around, and I happened to bring it to Marshall Fields.
And you were working at Fields then,
yes,
Sam?
Yes, I was an art director at Marshall Fields at the time. All my life, I wanted to work at a department store. So I left an art director position at a well-known agency.
What did you do that? Where are you from? Where did you go to school?
Well, I grew up all over. My father was a diplomat. I lived in places like Pakistan, Pakistan and Korea, and I was kind of a diplomat kid. Lived in Washington,
sure.
D.C. But I ended up in Michigan. I ended up going to Michigan State University. And when I graduated, the choices were really, I wanted to go to a big city, and it was
Detroit. You got
Detroit,
you got Toronto, you got Chicago. Yeah,
that was an easy decision. So I do feel like Chicago has become my hometown. I've traveled quite a bit through the decades with my jobs, but when I was at Marshall Fields, I worked with a lot of amazing photographers, and I saw a portfolio from one of the many models we used. I did a lot of work on men's fashion, and this portfolio came along, and it was just incredible. And
you're talking about Tom's
portfolio.
It
was Tom
Mayday.
Mayday's
portfolio.
So I called him, and he came in, and we were both students of photography in many ways. We really appreciated the history of photography, photographers. We knew a lot of the same names, and friendship started. But I think more importantly, we've done a lot of work together on books and projects. And
well, the latest project for these two gentlemen is the Trope City Edition Chicago. It is volume one, number one of what is likely to be what has already started as a series of photographic explorations, I want to call it, of various major cities around the planet. We got to take a little commercial, but they're going to be here all the way until 10 o'clock, so stay tuned. Will the Sox steal one from the division-leading Twins on their home turf? White Sox Twins, Monday night at 6:30 on WGN-TV Sports.
Did you hear about space crime?
It's an actual space crime that may have been committed for the first time. Two women are married, by the way, of their separation. One on the space station tapped into her computer finances.
Uh-huh.
And either moved some money or reallocated some money without her permission. So some sort of financial fraud, accused of committing identity theft from the International Space
Station. She needed LifeLock.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
People in space have better things to do, don't they?
Well, she had a lot of time. She's in the space station. Space crime.
What are you talking about?
Space crime.
Hi, folks. Orion here. My teammates at Gary Lang Cadillac are excited for the big event and want to help you score a touchdown with a brand new Cadillac. With over 2,000 vehicles on 23 acres, you're sure to make a winning play at Gary Lang Cadillac. Plus, the sales professionals at Gary Lang Cadillac are MVPs in the industry. They'll bring your Cadillac to your doorstep for a test drive. Rest assured, you'll feel like a Hall of Famer at Gary Lang Cadillac. Trust me, folks, I've been a part of the Gary Lang Cadillac family for more than a decade, and they are a name you can trust to find you the right car at the right price right now with service you can depend on. Schedule your appointment online at GaryLangCadillac.com. Gary Lang Cadillac, just minutes from anywhere on Route 31 between McHenry and Crystal Lake. And remember, if it doesn't say Gary Lang on the back, you probably paid too much.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results may vary. Exclusions apply.
But hey, I'm buying a huge flat-screen TV so I can finally see it without my glasses.
Why not just get LASIK at the LASIK Vision Institute? That's what I'm doing.
My glasses and contacts are a pain. I'd love to finally get rid of these, but who can afford LASIK?
You can. Because the LASIK Vision Institute is offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. Just text TRY to 350-350. The LASIK Vision Institute has already performed over a million procedures. They use the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision for a fraction of what others charge. Better vision, better value. The LASIK Vision Institute. Make this the year you finally get LASIK. For a free consultation plus an extra 20% discount, text TRY to 350-350. You'll see for free if LASIK is right for you. That's TRY to 350-350.
Let's face it, you're getting ripped off by your bank. You earn no interest on your balance. You get zero advice on how to manage your money. And you're charged outrageous fees. Your money deserves more. Check out Empower, the most rewarding and intelligent way to bank and crush your financial goals. Empower's high interest checking account earns 1.90% APY on all your money, plus cash back on debit purchases with no fees and no minimums. Empower also offers customized budgeting tools and real-time alerts to help you earn, save, and spend like a boss. And for trickier questions like how to build your credit or refinance your loans, the financial gurus at Empower are on standby to personally advise you. You can't get this experience anywhere else. Join over 500,000 customers who've installed the Empower app to grow their wealth and manage their money confidently. Get $10 free when you open and fund your Empower account with $50 in the next 24 hours. Empower, the most intelligent way to bank. To get started, download Empower for free in the App Store or Play Store.
Welcome back. Sam Landers and Tom Mayday are the partners, editors, and publishers of Trope City. Trope City Edition Chicago, Volume 1, Number 1, is their first published book. It is a stunning gathering of photographs. We'll get into the details of who the photographers are. There's some 260 shots from 27, I think, photographers. And it's, you know, I know Chicago pretty well. And this book, the photographs give me certain perspectives that I did not know, did not see, especially because I wasn't up in a helicopter or a drone in the last chapter of the four. So you guys meet at Fields. You're impressed with his work. Let's jump ahead many years. You obviously have an affinity for the creative art, and you started to work together, and you started to... When did you publish your first book, and what was that?
In the mid-90s, we actually collaborated and did a book called Great Chicago Stories. It was 60 portraits.
I remember that book.
And 60 stories. So.
Yeah, I was stunned I wasn't asked to be in the book. That's the only thing that troubled me about that book. That was a cool book, though. I liked it.
We were very young, didn't really know what we were doing.
So you worked for cheap.
We worked with Logan Distributors, and I'm not sure if they're around, but... it was a black and white book.
Yep.
We met, Oprah Winfrey, David Mamet.
Sure.
Many of the Chicago notables in different...
Sid Luckman, about whom I wrote about today in the Tribune. Yeah.
And we actually met with each of them, interviewed them, and spent usually a half a day to a day with them to get their favorite Chicago story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Tom would take their portrait where their story took place. So... It went to two printings. The first 7,500 books sold in 2 months. It was Chicago bestseller.
That's pretty good, guys.
So we got the bug. We got the taste for beautiful books.
Well, there's something, even though you, Tom, have seen your work in various publications and in annual reports and all sorts of other places, and there's a real jolt from that. There's not much recognition most of the time, except from the people signing the paycheck, which is probably the best recognition a freelance photographer could have. But this is a vastly different thing, seeing your names involved in published books.
Right. It was very exciting, and it was an incredible way to meet a lot of Chicago notables. And I just think that it did provide us with a venue for really understanding photography and connecting about our love of photography.
It must have provided what I think is probably the spark, or at least the seed of what has become Trope City editions, yes?
Yeah, absolutely, Rick. We had always talked about what the next Chicago book would be. I think, 20 years ago, Chicago was really a collection of stories.
No question.
Stories and notable people.
Mm-hmm.
I think today Chicago is probably more among the world-class cities like London and Hong Kong, and tourists and people from all over the world come to Chicago because of how beautiful the city is and how beautiful the architecture is.
Yeah.
So when Tom and I started thinking about creating Trope as a publishing company, we knew we wanted to do books about photography. One of the big questions we had was, where are the emerging photographers of today going to come? Because I think 20, 30 years ago, galleries...
Well, 20 or 30 years ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, you could have opened a phone book, because there were phone books, and found 200 very capable freelance photographers.
Yes, yes.
Both newspapers had a number of photographers on staff. Yeah. It goes back to when Gary Comer did the City 2000 thing.
Right.
Gary Comer, the founder of Land's End, said he wanted to catalog the city, and he footed the bill.
Rich Cahan.
Rich Cahan running, being stolen from the Sun-Times to take over that thing. There were a lot to choose from. Now there are not so many.
Well, yes, we think yes, though, because, when we look back, let's say 10, 15 years from now, the master photographers, the generation of photographers that we're going to be talking about, we think they're on social media today,
Interesting, and that's where you found the 27, I counted them, 27 photographers whose work is featured in this book. We got to take a commercial break, then we get some news, and then we will dive deep into what is really a remarkable book. It starts off here, Welcome to Your City, and I love that too. It is, you can go to, if you want more information, trope.com, TROPE.com. I'm assuming you can buy this book in any reputable bookstore, which is also another shrinking part of our world. But stay tuned for these commercials and the news, and we'll carry on with these two nice guys, Sam Landers and Tom Mayday. That again is Bob Mamet, local lad with his London House Blues, which is a tremendous, tremendous jazz CD. That's Bob playing the piano. The Trope City Edition Chicago, which launches Trope City Editions across the world, there will be more of these books, is a gathering of 260 images of a city that you may live in, but you have never quite seen the way you will see it on the pages of this book. I've seen the Wrigley Building a million times. I've worked in the Tribune Tower, and this is a spectacular shot. The men who put this book together, it's a brainchild of Sam Landers and Tom Mayday, who are the partners, editors, and publishers of Trope City Editions. Who are these photographers? There are 27 of them. Well, when you get, you get the idea, and you have a couple books under your belt, and you say, okay, now is the time, in a tricky publishing environment, to put out a collection of photographic images of the city we both live in and both love. How do you then go about selecting? We talked about 20 years ago, you would have hundreds of photographers from whom to select. You are interested in the new kind of photographers who are perhaps showing their work online. How did you start the search?
Well, because of our history living in Chicago, we naturally looked at photographers that we knew.
Sure.
Guys in their 40s, successful photographers. And as soon as we started looking at their work, there are two things that we saw right away. One is our city has changed so much. So while some of the photographers we know shot rigorously maybe 10, 15 years ago,
and had incredible archives.
Exactly.
But the city really looks different today.
Yeah.
And what we also realized was when we started researching online, Instagram has become the de facto portfolio capture online. And so whether you're an established photographer or a young new photographer, you're going to be on Instagram.
Interesting.
When we started looking at these photos, the images that just struck us right away, we started researching who they were. And we realized they were, some of these photographers were 22, 24-year-old self-taught photographers. Now, I think with the backgrounds that Tom and I had, we knew right away that there's a lot of redundancies and there are social influencers that are not necessarily photographers
exactly.
on Instagram. So
right.
I think because of our background, we were quickly able to identify photographers that we thought could play well in a book like this.
And you just simply got in touch with them through Instagram saying, hey, we're thinking of doing a book about Chicago. We'd be interested in seeing your portfolio.
It is interesting. It seems like once we got past the gatekeeper, whoever the gatekeeper was in a particular city, they would spread the word that we have a legitimate project going, and we have published books before, and there were some bona fides that needed to be checked in people's mm-hmm. minds.
Oh, of course, sure,
and,
sure.
Yeah. And then we got return phone calls.
Yeah, some of these photographers have 250,000 followers or more online. So you can imagine how often they're approached.
Some are from Chicago, some are not from Chicago, some are Chicago natives, yeah. Some live elsewhere and visit here frequently. Right. How could you possibly cut this down to 27?
I barely made the cut.
Huh?
I barely made the cut.
Well, and you've got the inside track.
And
too.
I had an inside track, I think.
Well, but did you say to yourselves, let's call it at 30, let's call it at 25. You must have at some point said, look, let's just take the best 27 we have.
That's kind of what we did.
Yeah.
And the London book just came out. And one of the things we learned...
And you went about that in the same fashion.
We went about it in the same way, but we have fewer photographers. The Hong Kong book has 18 photographers, I believe. The Tokyo book that's following in March will have about 17. We had 27. We love all the photographers in the Chicago book. But the editing, as you can imagine, the editing process was quite a challenge.
27 photographers, 260 images.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys looked at tens of thousands of images.
Yes.
What was interesting, too, is that for a lot of these photographers, their published moment, their final image was when it was published, posted on Instagram. So we had different technological requirements. We needed a high-res digital file for printing.
Sure.
And so that was a hurdle in itself for some of these guys to go back. They are learning how to be photographers in some cases, and so they didn't necessarily have the digital
The technical ability to do this.
Right.
Yeah. I will say, however, you know, the photographers that we've picked, the majority of them are very passionate photographers, and you know, we hope and we believe many of them will be around in 5 years, 10 years, and they're not just doing this because of social media or to become a social influencer.
I'm assuming they're not doing it because you guys are paying them a fortune
to do it
either. Yeah, I'm thinking that they are contributing these.
Yes, they are. However, one of the reasons we started the series is, as I said earlier, we wanted to find these emerging artists.
Yeah, it's a means of discovery. You guys are on a mission of discovery here,
right.
I think.
Yes.
And we have another emerging photographer series where we've published the first three solo books of individual artists.
Wow.
Street photographers.
Wow.
So, and then...
Interesting you say this right after a couple of days after Robert Frank, the original street photographer died. Let me ask you guys, in the technology has changed. These shots aren't, everybody thinks, one thing that troubles me is people think, wow, look at this. I took a great picture of you with my iPhone. There, ergo, I am a photographer. Mm-hmm. Having worked with people like Charles Osgood and the dozens of photographers I've worked with through the years at newspapers, there is a vast difference. Because I can sign my name doesn't mean I'm a writer, for instance. It's that big a difference, I think.
Right.
It's the way of, for instance, it's the way of looking at a building or looking at a face or looking at...
I absolutely agree with that. And these photographers have an eye and a sensibility that qualifies them as a photographer.
As an artist.
As an artist. And they are learning the technical aspects of it. They are, most of them, self-taught. But they're doing an amazing job teaching themselves. And the sheer energy that they bring to this learning curve that they're faced with is astounding. They're an amazing group of photographers.
Well, that's one thing I will tell you. I mean, the book basically is centered in the center of the city. It takes on Michigan Avenue and the river and the loop and Millennium Park and I'm trying to think.
The lakefront,
yeah, which is stunning. But it's basically a book for images of the central city,
yes.
Let's say.
Yes.
That's purposeful, no doubt, because this is where the architecture flowered. There are great buildings and some great buildings spread around,
right.
But most of them are concentrated downtown.
Yes. Yes.
You also selected, you have, part of the book, the lovely maps of where, really handsome maps of where all the photos took place. Why do you think that was important?
I think part of what we wanted to do was not just have a book of all photographs, but for people who enjoy photography who may not be photographers themselves.
It's basically a way to say, hey, you have a camera, here's where you can
exactly.
go, see what you see, shoot what you see.
And to get to know the city. So we've done that for each location, Hong Kong, London, Tokyo.
You also picked quotations.
Yes.
There's not much text here. The text that is here is quite good. They're sort of introductory graphs for people who don't know anything about the loop. You know, I don't know how Mike Royko, Nelson Algren, and Studs Terkel would feel about being paired with Ayn Rand, but they'd be happy to be paired with I don't know how they'd feel about Rand McNally, but Frank Lloyd Wright, H.L. Mencken, Mark Twain. What was it like to pick those quotations? I mean, you could, because you also could have had a million quotations in there.
You know, I think that was our contribution to the book, even though they weren't our quotes. You know, we wanted to select people that were somewhat well-known.
Sure.
But also quotes that I think really represented and complemented the photography and the architecture in Chicago. There's actually a quote by Audrey
Niffenegger,
who Tom actually went to school with, and she wrote...
Did you? Audrey's a great person.
She wrote a really great book.
Time Traveler's Wife.
She was a very talented photographer in high school. So it doesn't... I mean, she's an artist now and a writer, incredible writer.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So we really got a good sense of her.
There are a lot of Frank Lloyd, egomaniac that he was, there are a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright quotes, and you picked a very nice one. Eventually, I think that Chicago will be the most beautiful, great city left in the modern world. Yeah. Knowing Frank Lloyd Wright, he probably said that about a number of cities. We're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to take a quick little break, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the book and how you can get it and how you can look at some of the images, because they really are. This last one, Chicago from, is it called From the Sky or From Above?
From above.
Is quite remarkable, because unless you have an airplane or a flying a drone or a helicopter, you've never seen the city like you see it in that final. There are 8 sections, right?
Yes.
Is that right? 8 sections. That's the final section. And one very close by where we're sitting right now. We'll be right back. The first Trope City Edition is devoted to Chicago. 260 photographs by 26 emerging photographers and one very established photographer, Tom Mayday, who is sitting here. It is Chicago the way I have seen in my lifetime all manner of really bad photographic books about Chicago, where someone will come in who's a very good photographer and they'll take photos of the usual suspects, and someone will write some, you know, cheesy, cliche-ridden City of the Big Shoulders nonsense about the city I love. This will show you a Chicago from viewpoints, artistic viewpoints, that you have never seen before. You'll see the city, I think, in a brand new and very, very refreshing way when my guests, Tom Mayday and Sam Landers, went out looking for photographers. They went after young, emerging photographers because they will see a city in a different way than someone who has been looking at it and taking, perhaps just not for any bad reason, taking things for granted. They will see things in a new way.
One of the things that we were impressed with this group of photographers and their energy was to go out, no matter if it's below zero, no matter if it's snowing or raining or all kinds of conditions, the fog is rolled in. These guys are out and they're shooting and they're capturing and they're walking and exploring. And it's just incredible what they were able to capture. Sam and I actually went out and tried it on a few. One rainy night, I called up Sam, say, Sam, let's go out and try to get some shots for the book. And we realized these photographers have raised the bar. Our idea.
Yeah, you two old pros were like, hey, man, it's cold out here. Let's go back inside. Are you crazy? Yeah. You two old pros are like, wait a minute. This is for young kids. That's something that there's something to that point that's very refreshing about these images. I mean, that word sticks in my mind, refreshing. And it's just, it's a bunch of young people looking at the city in an artistically new way.
Yes.
Is that?
I think that's really true. And we really edited it and put the book together based on what we got. Even though we selected the photos, there are several images of the Cloud Gate, the Bean.
Yeah, well, sure.
Several images of Willis Tower.
And several images of the Wrigley Building.
Yes.
You know, what's interesting, there are pictures of the Willis Tower, for instance. The first image in that chapter, I have never seen the Willis Tower from that angle.
Yeah.
And with that contrast.
By Cameron Sears.
I hate that building. I mean, I hate almost everything about it, but seeing it here made me like it a bit.
Okay.
It didn't make me fall in love with it. Yeah. I mean, the loop and the river stuff is just is amazing to me.
Rick, if you don't mind, I'd love to just name some of the photographers.
Sure.
Because one of the really interesting things about meeting these photographers is they come from all walks of life. We have a woman, Sonia Weiss, who is a scientist. We have Neil Kumar. His entire portfolio on Instagram is our photos shot with an iPhone, and he's a dermatologist. So we have Koku Liu.
You've got Mike Spatz, who's a skateboarder from Milwaukee, discovering new ways to explore a city through photography. You've got Matt White, California native, who works as a financial analyst with a passion for travel and photography.
Max Leitner.
Yep. Yeah. On page 273, you can read about here's one. This doesn't really strike me as, wow, would this guy be a great photographer? Originally from the Los Angeles area, Nick Crawford, now living in Chicago, works as a technical recruiter. Yep. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, shoot some pictures.
Excellent.
But you found the interesting thing is that because of the new world that is the internet, you were able to discover, and you guys know a good photo when you see it.
We hope so.
No, I tell you, you can go an easy way. I'm sure it's on Amazon, but an easy way for you to buy this book would be to go to trope.com, and you'll see some other stuff there too, and you'll learn of the next edition, the Trope City Edition London, and then you will learn about the next one, Trope City Edition Hong Kong, and then Tokyo
and Paris more plans? And New York.
Huh?
And Paris and New York will be next.
Wow. Do you guys go to these cities and just like...
on occasion.
It's a tax write-off. Wait a minute.
That's a good point.
$20,000 having food in Tokyo at the finest hotel they have. We're interviewing photographers who are dermatologists. I can't tell you guys. I mean, you know it's a precarious publishing environment, but you guys come to it with such vast experience in the business of photography and publishing and editing and art directing that If you guys can't make it, nobody.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. Well, it's coming from me,
so take that on, take that under serious advisement, will you please? But the book is just beautiful, and I think, you know, walk in a bookstore. There still are bookstores. Walk in a bookstore, thumb through it, and it's astonishing that you guys were somehow able to pull this off for $40 a copy, which is nothing. It's a beautiful, beautiful book, and well, it's up to you, ladies and gentlemen. You're book buyers. It's up to you. Thank you both,
thank you.
Sam Lenders and Tom Mayday, who used to work for Victor Skrebnesky.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we'll send you a copy of my old. What I discovered about Victor in doing this long profile for the Tribune magazine, and I don't know if this is an apocryphal story. You know, Victor's growing up on near North Side. And one day he's in Lakeshore Park, which is between Chicago Avenue and Pearson on Lakeshore Drive, and he finds a Brownie camera in the rain. And he, honest boy that he is, he takes it inside and says, "I found this." And they said, "Well, if no one's come back to get it in 2 weeks, you can have it." That, whether it's true or not, I love the story. And Victor says it's true, so it's a great story. That's how Victor Skrebnesky became a photographer. Fellas, thank you so much for coming in, and great success. I'll keep people up on what's going on with Trope City.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We'll take a little commercial break, then we'll get some news, and then we'll talk to a couple female novelists. That, again, ladies and gentlemen, is the piano artistry of Bob Mamet from his CD, London House Blues. I have now read, over the last month, three of the books by my guest, Michelle Cox. Michelle, that's pretty good for me, isn't it?
It is, for sure.
You are so intriguing to me. You're a fine writer. You're a fine writer, and I guess that I've read three of what will soon be the five books in the Henrietta and Clive Howard series. Is that right? Is the fifth book soon to be published?
Yeah, the fifth will be out April 2020, so that seems soon to me.
Yeah, I'm sure it does for a writer. You said this, and I'm very intrigued by something you said. You said, when I finally decided to try writing, the creativity within me, that divine essence, finally found its true home. I'm happiest when I'm creating, and I hope I can keep writing for a long time. I think you will keep writing for a long time, but what was it? Tell me about your background. How did you start writing? What were you doing that brought you to writing?
That's a good question. I was always I was a good writer in school and college, but I never really considered writing a novel because I didn't think I was a good enough writer.
Yeah.
And I think
as you know, there's a vast difference between wow, you got an A on this paper and sitting down, I think from what I know of you and having read you, I think you take the writing of novels very seriously, but you also understand it's not easy.
Correct. Yeah, it's really not. And I think I have a very classic style. That's because I mostly just read only the classics until about age 40 when my third kid was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really read, I shouldn't really probably say this, but I haven't really read a lot of contemporary fiction. So I never thought that, you know, I could compare to Dickens or Austen or any of these, so I didn't even try.
Sure.
But yeah, it's harder than you think. But really, to be honest, the writing itself is the part where you just sort of referenced where the joy comes from. Well, it's the marketing and the promoting that's a little bit harder.
Well, you're also very, very good at that. I could not be more impressed by your website, seriously.
Oh,
and the website
you.
Is michellecoxauthor.com. NovelNotes.com. I also want to talk about Novel Notes of Local Lore, which just fascinates me. But so what is it you're doing? You have three kids, and what is it you're doing? What is it you're doing professionally that eventually gets you to sit down and tackle the arduous task of writing a novel?
You know, it really I started it out just as a personal challenge to see if that I could actually sit in a chair long enough to and type long enough to actually produce a novel. And I'm just a very disciplined person. Before I started this whole writing, you know, journey, I was a stay-at-home mom. So, but I was I'm a very type A person. So I thought about this, not the story necessarily, but I thought about whether I could do this for a couple of years.
Wow.
Because once I say that I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it. So I wanted to make sure that I felt like I had what it took to write a book.
We
and
had
once
the,
I made...
Had the discipline to do it, in essence, right? And you were waiting, I suppose, for the once you learn that you have the discipline, which I think is, you know, a huge part of one's ability to write anything of length, then you come upon this story that it's historical fiction. You obviously are drawn to the 1920s, 30s in Chicago. What's the seed of that attraction?
It's, you know, it's because before I you know, got married and had kids, I worked in a nursing home on the Northwest Side, and I heard so many amazing stories, which is the basis for the Novel Notes blog that you mentioned. Yeah, and so the whole idea behind the series was based on a woman that I actually met in home. And she had this amazing life in the 30s in Chicago, and she told me all these stories. And so, you know, 20 years later, when I was sitting down to write a novel, I thought, you know what, I'm going to pull from this woman's story. And that was the birth of Henrietta.
Wow. But you've also done, I mean, you obviously have done some serious research of the time and period, which is undeniably a fascinating time and period. One that I've researched for nonfiction work over the years. So that was kind of the catalyst, is memories of this woman who followed you around the nursing home telling you stories of a time that you didn't know about, and then exploring that time. You know, in many ways, I know your novels are their mysteries, and you know, but there's a real interesting, I have found, having read three of the four published books, and I'll read the fourth and then the fifth when it's published. There's a real interesting, I think, love story between Henrietta and Clive Howard. Could you? They're from vastly different backgrounds, are they not?
Correct. Yes.
Describe them.
Well, Henrietta is the oldest of eight kids, and her father kills himself during the Depression, because of the Depression.
Sure.
And so she is the one who has to, you know, go out and make money for the family. Her mother's chronically depressed. So you have this real spunky sort of woman, again, based on a real person who was, you know, doing all these strange jobs in Chicago to try to make it. And then you have Inspector Howard, who is the sort of aloof cop that shows up on the scene when there's a murder in the first book. Mm-hmm. And he has his own sort of secret. So he was, you know, in the First World War, he has a lot of trauma from that. And he has sort of escaped into being a detective in Chicago as a way to sort of deal with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But he hasn't revealed to her that he is actually from a very privileged background.
It's like Downton Abbey kind of background.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and she was not expecting that.
Well, I just find
reverse Cinderella.
You know, you've done a remarkable job, especially carrying them through all three books. Did you know that when you finished Michelle Cox, when you finished that first book, there must have been some kind of joy that you felt. But it's a long way, as you know, from finishing a book to seeing it in a bookstore, is there not?
Yes,
What was that road like for you?
It was tricky. I actually wrote a different novel before the series, and that was the one that I tried to get published. And so I ended up, I heard about hybrid publishing, which is sort of a cross between, sort of lives in the middle between traditional and self. And this seemed like a perfect sort of vehicle for me. And it has, it's been a fantastic relationship. It's been a wonderful experience. I've learned so much about publishing.
And it's resulted in awards. And you were very good at marketing, too, which I think is an essential part. You know, J.D. Salinger wouldn't have liked it, but it's an essential part of publishing these days. We have to take a quick break, Michelle, but we'll come back and continue on. We're talking to Michelle Cox, that's M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E-C-O-X, author.com, where you can buy her books and you can read more about her. And I have to talk about this novel Notes of Local Lore with you, Michelle. We'll be back in a couple minutes. The four so far books in the Henrietta and Inspector Howard series by Michelle Cox, I am through three of them. And in the third one, we were talking about the relationship between these two very fascinating and artfully drawn characters. They get married in the third book. I'm not giving anything away, but it's quite spectacular. Michelle, one day I want to have you come in here so we can have a nice hour-long conversation. This half hour is just meant to introduce you to to the listeners. Do you have a couple events coming up, or is this an old thing? Are you going to be in Galena?
I am, yes. I'm going to be in Galena on Tuesday at the library.
Yeah, Galena's a lovely, lovely town. Yeah, Tuesday at 6 p.m. at the library. I told you, I got to devote some time to this. That's why you come in here and we'll talk for an hour. Novel Notes of Local Lore is a weekly, and you're really solid on the weekly part. It's a blog on Michelle's website dedicated to, what do you want to call them? Obscure? Incredibly obscure? in Chicago figures. What is the seed of that? You know, I got to tell you something. Having read maybe a dozen or two, there's a collection there, I think. There is something there. Do you think so, too?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But they're just amazing stories.
Tell me the seed of that.
Well, again, I mean, they came from the nursing home where I worked. Mm. And I often tell, if I'm talking to groups of writers, that if you're ever short of ideas, just go sit in a nursing home for a couple of weeks.
Wow, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Because you'll have more stories than you could ever use. And these are, you know, these people live through such an amazing time in Chicago, and they're from all different countries, all different, you know, walks of life, and what they went through, what they experienced. I mean, you can't make this up.
Exactly. No, I think you're right. So do you research some of these characters and try to write kind of biographies of them all, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were either from interviews that I did with the actual person or with their immediate family members, anybody that I could get. And I was working as a social service, and I would sit with these people when they came in, and which wasn't really part of my job description, but I just found them so fascinating. I was supposed to write a paragraph about them.
Yeah.
And I would sit with them for probably a week or two and get as much information as I could. And then I would write pages and pages and pages about, you know, because I just couldn't condense it into a paragraph. There was just too much. But no one ever told me not to. And the staff really loved it.
What do people think of Novel Notes of Local Lore on your blog? You must have a growing fan base, myself included now.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, my best fan blog story is I was at in downstate Illinois. My brother wanted me to go to this very rural auction. And, you know, I'm in the Chicago suburbs. And sure. So I went and he said, I'll get a ticket, you know, register. So I thought, oh, okay. So I went up to the desk and I was, you know, applying for, a bidding ticket. And the woman behind the desk, it was like, you know, just like a folding table or something. Yeah. And she said, are you Michelle Cox, the writer? And I thought, wow, yes, I am.
I've arrived.
Yeah, exactly. And she said something that I did not expect. She said, I read your blog every week, and I love it. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. I didn't say anything about my books. She was a fan of the blog, period.
Well, but as am I now. I told you, a few minutes ago that there is something there that seems to cry out for those stories so beautifully told to be gathered in between hard covers. You do, Michelle, before I let you go, you have a standalone novel coming out also in addition to the fifth in the series of Henrietta and Inspector Howard?
Well, yeah, I'm trying. I'm currently searching, querying an agent. It's going through a developmental edit right now, and I'm very hopeful that, you know, I'm close to getting that one.
Well, I can't cannot imagine. Tell me why you did that, because I can't imagine that Inspector Howard and Henrietta have run out of steam, because you were able in these first the three that I've read to come up with very interesting plots. Is it just something you wanted to stretch your wings a little in a standalone?
A little bit, and I'm hoping to. To be really honest, I mean, I'm trying to break into traditional publishing because I would like to.
The funny thing is, such as it is in 2019, the whole model of publishing is just, I think, so fractured. And you are a talented writer, and I am confident you will succeed in the traditional world or whatever the new world lies out there. It's a pleasure meeting you over the phone. You will be at the Galena Public Library in beautiful downtown Galena on September 17th, which is Tuesday at 6 p.m. And you can explore Michelle further at michellecoxauthor.com, michellecoxauthor.com. Michelle, it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone. We will one day arrange for you to come in here so we can spend an hour talking about your characters. And I really love the fact the respect that you feel for stories of that have nothing to do with Instagram and Pinterest, but have to do with the fabulous decade of the 30s in Chicago. I have great, great respect for the way you respectfully treat the people who you're depicting. So thank you. It's a pleasure to meet you. Have fun in Galena, and I'll make arrangements for you to come in here one night, okay?
I would love to.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I would, too. Thank you so much. Take care.
You're
again.
Welcome.
Again, she'll be in Galena on Tuesday at 6 p.m., and she can be found at michellecoxauthor.com. We'll be talking to a great friend of the show who was in here some time ago. She writes real fast-paced thrillers, many of which are set in some of Chicago's notable saloons. Catherine O'Connell, not the famous Irish singer, but the novelist, will be in here. That's the piano of David Mamet. The CD is called London House Blues. David, of course, a lifelong Chicagoan, as was his older brother, David Mamet, who's written some notable plays and movies. One of my favorite people in the world is in here, Catherine O'Connell, not the singer. We always have to do that, don't we, Catherine? We have to go.
And I always say, she got CatherineO'Connell.com.
So I'm
CatherineO'Connell.net. But I know her. She's wonderful.
Yeah, I know you guys know each other. But, one of the things is, a nice Catholic girl from Northbrook grows up to work in bars and gets a unbelievably, and tell me I'm wrong, because I've interviewed before and I trust my memory and will know that I have Alzheimer's when I can't remember anything. But you went to the University of Colorado to study journalism, right?
I went to the University of Colorado to get a degree. I decided to go to pick journalism because I loved to write.
You never had the notion of getting into newspapers, did you?
No, it's kind of, the writing's too restricted for me. Do you remember that pyramid form?
Oh, yeah.
The most important fact.
Oh, yeah.
And it's essential, although we've lost it completely now. But we were taught just to report the facts, the most important facts first, and then it was a pyramid. And then you could expound.
For someone who has become such a talented novelist, it did take you a while. I mean, I think as a child and a young person, you have a pretty vivid kind of Irish imagination, right? But it took you a while to come to writing because some of your first jobs were in the legendary days of Division Street and Rush Street saloons. You kind of were doing that, I think. Tell me I'm wrong, Catherine O'Connell.
Well,
you were doing that to sort of gain the kind of experiences you wanted to gain in order to write about them, yes?
Yes. I've always been a writer. When I was a child, I wrote short stories, and they'd read them in the class, and Northwestern had a gifted children's program, which I would have gone in, but I think my parents didn't want to pay the freight for that, really. But I love to write, and so when I finished college, I decided I would collect some experiences, and what happened was I traveled Europe, and I ski-bummed in Aspen for a couple of years.
Where'd you learn to ski? When did you learn to ski?
My father used to take us up to Alpine Valley.
Oh.
It's kind of hard to go
training
back
guy.
Now.
There are now thousands of people going, oh my God, I learned at Alpine Valley.
In Wilmot,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, in Wilmot, right.
When I was in high school, we used to drive up to Wilmot after class.
Wow.
At about, I don't know if I should say this, 100 miles an hour. I'm glad we're all still alive. And I believe the drinking age was 18.
And you were who? Yeah. There's no statute of limitations. It's long run out for
I'm
your
so
speeding
we
underage.
We were 16.
Underage
and we had those,
drinking kind of thing. Did you go? I don't know this. Where'd you go to high school? Did you go to a Catholic school out there?
No, I went to Glenbrook North.
Did you?
Went to St. Norbert's for grade school.
Oh, okay. So you come back here to sort of gather experiences. You're in Europe for a while. You're a ski bum, which is a nice thing to be. I don't ski, but I assume it's a very nice thing to be. And you come back here. How are you drawn? It's a stupid question, Rick. An attractive young person was drawn to Division Street and Rush Street because they were attractive young people, right?
Well, yes, but also I thought, I started waitressing and then was tending bar, later managed a bar, but I thought I'll work at night and write during the day.
The day. The problem was there are 4
when you
o'clock
work till
bars,
4 a.m.
And there are other bars who will stay open later
there
than
were some
4
after hours
yes,
things going
there were.
Back then. We're talking about the 1980s
yeah.
right now.
So you abandon, I mean, you get up at noon or 1.
Or 2.
Yeah, 1 and go over to Oak Street Beach or whatever you do. And it did not, you realize it did not lend itself to writing novels.
It certainly does not lend itself to discipline to write novels.
Yeah, yeah. So did you do any kind of writing?
Oh, I would write sketches. And when you work in a bar, you hear and see a lot. And when you're sober in a bar,
exactly,
you see and hear a lot. So, and I've used a lot of that in my stories.
You were kind of banking these experiences for your... Did you realize it then? Or you would... You know, someone who has an interest in writing, I think, and has some ambition to write, when you would see something in your sober self going on around you that was a fascinating encounter or a weird encounter, you kind of put that in a little place in your head, didn't you? To say, maybe I'll use that one day.
Yes, and believe me, you see people act in different sorts of ways. And some of the things I've written, I will actually hear people say, no one would ever do that. And I say, I've seen it or I know them. And that's just seeing the human condition, learning the nature of human beings.
Well, the book that we're celebrating now, the paperback publication of Catherine's The Last Night Out, that if memory serves, I read it about a year ago when it first came out in paperback. It begins in the wake of a bachelorette party with the woman waking up in bed with a strange man, correct?
And you said you didn't think you have a good memory.
Well, no, this is how I test
I'm
myself.
Cheesy.
This is how I test myself. I remember the book vividly.
So Maggie Trueheart wakes up the morning after her bachelorette party with a stranger in her bed. One of the other attendees at the bachelorette party is murdered that evening, and the stranger becomes a person of interest.
You would think.
So Maggie's in a bit of a pickle, so to speak. And I place it about 2 weeks before the wedding, so that gives me lots of time for lots of activities.
It got tremendous reviews. I liked it very, very much. One of the reasons I love your work is it is so Chicago-centric. I mean, I think you named... There was a bar still there, I think, called the Hang Up, which you called the Overhang.
The Overhang.
Right, just to protect the innocent,
yeah.
Kind of. Is it, when you're sitting down and writing, Catherine O'Connell, do you drift back in time, or do you must tap into a place, the place you put all those memories and all those good stories. Do you feel like you're tapping into something, a reservoir kind of?
I do. And when I sit down to write, I generally know where I want to start that morning or afternoon at a particular time. But I know it sounds, I don't even know the word I want to use. What a great writer. But I go places that I don't even, I read my material back and I think, where did that come from? And can I add a little disclaimer right
now? Sure.
I always want the listeners to know.
I never killed a woman at my bachelorette party.
But I speak so much differently from the way I write, so because I never know what's going to come out of my mouth. So.
Yeah, agreed. No, and that's fine. I think that's just fine. Your book, Well Read and Dead, what's that? Remind me what that's about.
Well, it was part of a high society mystery.
That's right. You had these high society mystery books.
But that one started, the first one was Well Bred and Dead.
Right.
And then I had a friend named David Grafton who wrote biographies of wealthy women. And he wrote something on the Cushing girls, who one of them was Babe Mortimer Paley.
Sure.
And he and I were supposed to meet with Sugar Rothbard at the time. We were going to give a presentation, so we were going to discuss our presentation. I'm waiting at the Mayfair Regent, and Sugar doesn't come. They send a pink slip. This is pre-cell phone.
Yeah.
And so David didn't show up, and so I went home, and I called his house, and a man answers the phone, and I says, David there?
That's
he says,
right.
He says, who's calling? I said, this is Kathy O'Connell. And he said, well, Kathy, David's here, but he's dead.
Dead.
And I was, of course, taken aback. And I said, Dad. And he said, I'm sorry to be so abrupt. He said, we hadn't heard from him in 3 days. The police just let us in, and I'm staring at his body.
Wasn't there something? David was not who he...
David had stolen someone
an
else's
identity. That's right.
And so his closer women friends and I were going through his belongings, and they found all these birth certificates. So, and he claimed to come from... the Kodak, the Eastman family.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I just kind of took the whole thing and ran with it.
Ran with it.
And it became a really fun.
No one could blame you. We got to take a short commercial break. I will tell you more about The Last Night Out and also the recently published, recently meaning in the last few days, her latest book, which takes us out of Chicago and takes it to the other place Catherine O'Connell lives, which is Aspen, Colorado. We'll talk about those in 2 minutes. On Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, from 4:30 to 6 p.m., Catherine O'Connell will be signing the paperback version of her latest book, The Last Night Out, the book we were just talking about that begins with a woman waking up the night after her bachelorette party with a stranger in the bed and someone from the bachelorette party dying. It begins at 4:30. It is at Pippin's a charming little place right next to Downtown Dogs on Rush Street, just north of Chicago Avenue, very accessible near the Water Tower. Now, Water Tower Place, near Water Tower Place, but it's near the real Water Tower. That is from 4:30 to 6. And on Friday night, she will be at the one and only Centuries and Sluice in Forest Park, run by Augie Alexi, who is one of the great independent booksellers of all time. Last night out, we've told you a little about, are you going to be selling this book too?
First Tracks?
First Tracks is the one set in Aspen.
So the Pippin's event is exclusively to the Last Night Out because it's the beer bar.
It's a bar book.
And it's Rush Street in the 80s. I used to manage Pippin's Tavern.
I know.
So it's a little reunion.
You used to run the party bus, too, didn't you? The infamous, famous party bus.
That plays a role in the Last Night Out also.
Yes, it does.
The Last Night Out was the first thing I ever wrote.
I know.
And I found an agent for it, and he didn't sell it, and then he sold my next book, which was Skins.
Yeah.
Going back some time. So I just put The Last Night Out in a cupboard, and then went on to write Skins and Well Bred and Dead. And Well Read and Dead. And then one day I'm reading Girl on a Train, and then I read Gone Girl, and I said, I've got this book.
I've already done those books.
Yeah, same audience.
Basically, no question.
Not the same plot.
Not at all.
The psychological thriller,
absolutely.
Getting in the women's heads.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily protagonists that you adore, but you want to know what happens. And so I pulled my book out, and my husband and I had a business called The Party Bus, which was filled with bachelorette parties. So I got to incorporate some of that, but it all came together and
your husband must be, I know that shortly after you got married is when you decided, you know, you had worked in bars, you'd managed Pippin's for a while, you worked for a wine liquor distributor for a while and were very successful with that. And you met your husband, he was once a partner with Lodge Management Group, which owns half the bars on the planet now, the great Lynn McKinney. Your husband must have been very supportive of you when you first started writing, yes?
A little bit of a raised eyebrow.
So, you want a what? I thought you were a bartender.
Well, no, he knew I was a writer.
Yeah, I know.
But I had been working as a wine importer for a great importer, Cobrand. They represent Tate and Champagne, Louis Jadot wines. And I got quite an education there.
Sure.
Because when I can write with authority about wine, about sales. In fact, I've had about every job you can ever have.
Well, I also think that you have, and you bring it all to your books, you have a very solid foundation that doesn't smack of academic research. It smacks of life research, which I think is a huge bonus. The First Tracks, which is her next hardcover publication, begins, it's set in Aspen, much of it. It begins in a terrific manner with an avalanche that you describe. Have you ever been in an avalanche?
No, but I know of lots of people who have and survived, and I know of lots of people who haven't didn't.
And you must have debriefed them, because this is really, you know, I'm reading it. It just starts, I heard it before I saw it. And then you take into how the skis come off and that would make it easier to get out and stuff. It's scary, that beginning.
Well, you know, the power of an avalanche is so tremendous. And we had the biggest snow year we've had in a long time last year. So I've gone out on several hikes this summer. And the damage of the avalanche, the trees, and it goes down one slope and up the other side. But it's a beautiful sort of damage because it's natural. But you'll walk through an avalanche debris and then come out where it's all green and beautiful. And then farther along, there's another slide. This is not in the ski areas, I might
add. And then you find a dead body somewhere.
Because I write it into the book.
Do you still ski?
Oh, yes, I see.
I was always intrigued with Aspen Words as a kind of writer's literary kind of society there, which you're a prominent part. What is that?
I'm a board member.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. Aspen Words was born out of just this small writer's group that started about 30 years ago, Writers Under a Tree, and they called themselves the Aspen Writers Foundation. And then it was Read and Critique, and it grew, and they started bringing in authors in the winter to speak. And
that's where you met.
That's where I met Frank McCourt.
Frank McCourt.
Right.
That's
but I've been
right.
with Jeffrey Eugenides and Colin
Local
McCann.
Boy. Wow.
Colin McCann. Yes. And so very fortunate to meet so many authors. I'm going to say this name wrong, but
who do you a few minutes we have left, who do you love to read? Who influenced you? Who do you, or who now do you love to read? Can you, Catherine O'Connell, the accomplished novelist, who do you say, oh, I'm so glad so-and-so has
another new book out? Well, first I read all over.
Yeah.
All level. And I say reading is like eating. Sometimes you want fast food and sometimes
right,
you
sure,
want gourmet.
Sure.
But right now I've been on a World War One and Two kick.
Wow.
So Kate Atkinson.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Life After Life in God in Ruins. They're amazing books. I read Birdsong, which is old by Sebastian Hawke, though, and that's World War One, and that is the quintessential World War One book.
Your books are being translated into all sorts of languages now, haven't they?
Yes. I'm so excited. My publisher is from London, British. And so he went running to the Frankfurt Book Fair when he bought Last Night Out. He loved it so much. So he talked it up so much that we sold to the Germans, Italians, French,
jeez.
Portuguese, Brazilians, that's Portuguese, and I left somebody else. The French.
Wow. Yeah. You're pleased with your career so far, right? I mean, of course, you would love to sell more books, but you are pleased, because the beginning, I haven't finished it yet, but the beginning of First Tracks is really stunning.
Well, that's going to be a series.
Is it?
Because my publisher asked me, can you do a mystery series nobody's doing? And so I thought about it. I always wanted to do a one-off of Aspen, but I thought, how about a female ski patroller as what you call an amateur or accidental sleuth?
Yeah, Greta Westerlund. Mm-hmm. That is her name. This is the first Greta Westerlund thriller. Catherine, it's great to see you. And again, if you want to meet Catherine, 4:30 to 6 at Pippin's, 806 North Rush, just north of Rush in Chicago. It's her old stomping grounds. She was a manager there for a couple of years, and it gave her a lot of the material that...
A lot of fodder
for her book, The Last Night Out. It's always great to see you, sweetie. And go to CatherineO'Connell.net. Not
Catherine
.com.
With a C.
With a C. It's always great to see you. I'll see you Tuesday night and Friday night at Centuries and Sluice in Forest Park.
Superb.
There you go. Thanks. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We got to take a commercial break. Then we'll get some news and carry on.